Welcome back, everyone. And just what a topic we're unpacking during this series, focused and inspired by actually the three guests that we have tonight, along with the first session guest, Tristan Edwards, and an Oregon conversation that we had about a year ago that is community held restorative justice. And I'm Molly Rowan Leach. I'm here to take care of you and to get you feeling good and engaged with our guests tonight. And we'll have a 90-minute session. We're going to definitely have interaction time. So if you have questions, maybe jot them down as they come to you or chime them in the chat. I'm sure our guests will have more information about you about how to get a hold of them as well in the preferred method that they would wish. So, again, welcome back to Community Held Restorative Justice. And what does that mean to you? I think we're going to have some interaction around that tonight. Want to warmly welcome Christina M. Cabeza of the Colorado Coalition for Restorative Justice Practitioners, Ames Stenson of the Restorative Rainbow Alliance. And Ames is also very, very active in other projects and coalitions. So I'll let Ames share a bit more about their work in all those pockets. And the amazing Lindsay Frischer, District Attorney in the La Plata County, Durango area, southwest corner, beautiful area of Colorado. And I just want to say a few personal, like, I'm not going to read a curriculum vitae tonight for each because that would take me 2 hours for each of them. So what I'd like to do is share from the heart. What you're about to hear is a 90-minute distillation of three lives dedicated to peace and restoration and to human rights in not just in Colorado, but in our world. And they live that path. They live it. It's a restorative path for them. I've worked with each of them. I've been privileged to learn from them. And I can't thank you enough, each of you, for being here to share tonight on these angles. And I know you have a really amazing presentation prepared for us tonight. I'm going to turn off the screen share, but I just want to remind everyone also to take a look at all of the organizations that are represented by each of these individuals. And of course, I didn't mention yet the Southwest Community Justice Coalition, which Lindsay has co-founded alongside and with an incredibly robust group of people. I got to firsthand witness the progress, slow and careful, meaningful, with best practices, with authentic connection in mind, even amidst the most difficult of situations of coming from within the system. And Lindsay and Ames and Christina have all worked within those nuances deeply, to say the least. So without further ado, just encouraging you, take a look at your Padlet. We're going to have this recording up afterwards, and any resources they want to have posted, we'll put those up there as well. But please circulate, especially if nothing else, the work of the Restorative Rainbow Alliance and their best practices for LGBTQIA+. This is a groundbreaking document that you can find on their website, and we'll hear more about that tonight. But support all of these organizations that are a part of this, that make it possible to do this series. So that's all I have to say for now. And again, Christina, Lindsay, and Ames, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And take it away.
Thank you, Molly. That was a very heartfelt opening and welcoming, and we're receiving it. Hi, all. It's so good to be with you this afternoon and evening, it sounds like, for many of you. My name is Lindsay Frischer. I use she and they pronouns. And we thought that one important way to enter this collective virtual space together and join your already established community was by way of offering a centering or grounding practice. One of my skill sets is in somatic practice as a somatic coach. And so I would love, and again, this is take it or leave it, this is entirely voluntary, but I'd love to offer a centering practice in the lineage that I was trained up in, Strozzi Institute, also an offshoot of generative somatics, which is located in Petaluma, California, the Institute. And so we center in order to feel present, open, and connected. Of course, it is not about fixing or changing anything about us. It's the middle or end of the day. And so we are arriving from a lot of different experiences, energies, pressures, et cetera. And so this is just a helpful tool to orient to our shared space and encourage you to stay seated or stand up, whatever is accessible to you. You can keep your eyes open for this practice, but my invitation is to remove them from the screen, right? So we're going to center in four dimensions: length, width, depth, and purpose. I will quickly move us through these dimensions, starting with feeling for any sensations that we can notice, bringing awareness to any sensations in our body, temperature, vibrations, pulsing. I like to notice the contact that I make with the earth. And a little hack I like to share is that earth is always in present moment, right? So if our minds are racing, we can reorient to the present moment by connecting with the earth and feeling for the connection. Good. Good. And then from here, just bringing our awareness to about 2 inches below our navel, which is what we refer to as the center of our body's gravity in this lineage. Right. So from here, we will start to bring awareness to this first dimension, this vertical line running from the soles of our feet all the way up to the top of our head. Right. And feeling for the polarity of gravity bringing us down to the earth, also as we're lifting up towards the skies. And in this lineage, we refer to this dimension as the dimension of dignity. And so the invitation here is to just notice how you connect with or locate your dignity in this vertical line, in this dimension. Again, nothing to change or fix. And that might look like just breathing a little bit more fully into your chest. It might be lifting your shoulders up and dropping them, releasing. Good. And then from here, we'll move into the second dimension of width, side to side. This could look like extending your arms out. It could look like turning your head and checking out what's beside you and what's in your space. What or who are you sharing space with? Also, just bringing awareness to the space you occupy, how much space you occupy, right? If you're standing or even seated with your hips tight together, perhaps try on separating your legs a little more. What does it feel like to take up a little bit more space? Or to the contrary, what does it feel like to narrow in? Good. This can also look like filling out and inhabiting the fullness of your physical body. So just feeling into the outer edges of your body, puffing your cheeks, softening your gaze to see the peripheral view a little more. Good. And in this dimension, we think about connection. Physically and energetically, where my body ends and the world around me begins, right? So feeling for any person or object, plant, living species or being that you might be able to draw connection to this online community of ours, and just notice how you do that from this dimension of width. Beautiful. And just moving along to this third dimension of depth, feeling for front body, back body, starting with our back body. Perhaps some of you pay attention to your back. Perhaps there's sensations or even pain at our backs. But in this moment, it might be the first time you're bringing your awareness to your back, doing that by maybe leaning back in your chair or leaning on your heels if you're standing, going ahead and bringing a hand to your back if that's accessible, looking behind you. We like to orient in this dimension to the 4 billion years of evolution at our back, right, that got us to this moment. And that might mean leaning back a little bit more on that dinosaur tail of ours. Good. Thinking about who is at our back, right? The lineages, the ancestors that have come before us, and also the many hands in our life now that are at our back. And just notice how you feel for that. Nice work, y'all. Bringing your awareness through the middle body to the front body, feeling for all the parts of our front body that we tend to organize from in any given day, whether it's at our computer, walking, driving. And just notice if any parts of our front body wants a little attention, wants a little contact. I'm feeling my brow wants to soften a little. Good. And from here, just feeling into what is ahead, whether that's directionally forward or up, however you orient to what's ahead. And just notice how in this dimension you can feel for what might want to emerge. Good. And then returning to the center of our body's gravity for this fourth dimension of purpose and care. Just notice how you respond to the question, what matters to me? What matters to me? Right on. And when you're ready, we'll take a moment to return back to the screen, the center of our virtual meeting. Thank you all for that practice. I'll pass it off to Christina to kick us off with introductions.
Thank you so much. My body really appreciates that and needed that. It's always a pleasure to start with just a grounding and a body awareness. So thanks everybody for participating to the level that you felt called to. So hi. Good to be in space with everybody. Hi. Even those who are off camera, I see you. My name is Christina Cabeza. My pronouns are she, they, ella. My role in RJ is as the executive director of the Colorado Coalition for Restorative Justice Practices, which is a statewide organization in Colorado, and of which Lindsay is a board member and Ames is our ex officio president. So glad to be here representing our coalition. And as far as I just want to say a little bit more about my role in RJ. Right now, it feels like the role is to hold to the values in most practically in collaborative spaces. So it's not necessarily in conflict spaces, but more in community building and holding to our shared values, even when it's challenging, depending on different capacities. So that's my current role in RJ. I was first trained in RJ about 20 years ago in a small town, Estes Park, Colorado. And I was working as a victim advocate at the time. And part of that was training in restorative justice. And I will always remember that as a foundational pivot in my life to know that there is a healing path that we can do collectively, that it's non-religious or dogmatic, but really human-centered at the things that we're challenged with. So that has been in my life for the last 20 plus years in all the different spaces that I've worked. And I keep on going deeper, spiraling deeper into the practice and learning more every day, every time I'm with people, every time I'm pushed to learn and listen more deeply. So thank you for the opportunity here today. So each of us is going to introduce ourselves and then talk about what community means to us and then share a fun fact. Just so y'all know. And we encourage you all to put that in the chat too so we can get to know who you are. So, your role in RJ, what does community mean to you? And a fun fact. Okay. So, I'll jump into what does community mean to me? For me, I lived in a small community in Colorado for about 20 years, and it was a an unintentional intentional community is how they describe themselves. Small town, about 1,200 people. And what I learned in that community is that community holds all of it. At first, I probably thought community meant some kind of idyllic situation where we're a community and that's the ideal to get to community. And what I came to realize is that community is where it's more complex than I ever thought it could be. And it's as simple as two people connecting. So I've gone from thinking I don't have community because I don't have an intact culture to feel like I'm part of a community. I've changed that point of view to be, I can find community in all of my interactions and all my connections. And so it's simplified it for me, and it's helped me to remove some barriers of what it means to be in community. So yeah, I'll share that. And then I have a fun fact. Love to see some fun facts in the chat. My fun fact is that I can pull a song from most conversations if it has a lyric line from the 90s. So I can just bust out in song at any moment if it reminds me of a song, right? And this is because my brother and I, who was my best friend growing up, we used to have cassettes, right? You'd record off, Casey's Top 40, right? And many of you remember that. And because we didn't have lyrics, we didn't have enough money to buy all the cassettes and the songs that we wanted, so we would tape them, then we'd write down all the lyrics together. And this is like an ongoing project for like 6 years. So that I think has helped me have this uncanny ability to like pull a thread of a song in any given moment. And when my brother and I together, it's super fun. And we are known in our family as those clowns. So I just share that. And I'm gonna pass it to center for either Ames or Lindsay to take it up. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. I'm happy to go next. Thank you, Lindsay, for the wonderful grounding. And Christina, I want to invite you to bust into song at any point if you feel a thread in this space here today. So, thank you all for welcoming us. Molly, thanks for inviting us, and really wonderful to be in this space with you all. Ames, Stenson, they, them, their pronouns. I work in the Inglewood, Colorado area. I live just south of that in Centennial. From Colorado, long history of our family tree being rooted on stolen land from the 1700s, in kind of the North Dakota area, what's now called North Dakota area. So, yeah, I'm recognizing, I guess, part of my work towards naming, claiming community for myself. I have a lot of digging to do and a lot of kind of inquiry around what's transpired over the years and the privileges that my family has had that have harmed other people. So just kind of naming that feels close to my heart right now. What do I do? So I run the restorative justice program here in Inglewood. We are a municipal court program, so basically diversion program. I'll speak a little bit more about that a little bit later, but that's kind of my day job. I work within kind of the court team and a colleague that we just hired part-time to do some of our case coordination. I also have been a part of the Colorado Coalition for Restorative Justice Practices, and working at the state level around supporting practitioners across our state in very practical ways, as well as kind of what are our bigger visions for the state. And had the real huge pleasure and honor to work with Christina and Lindsay in my time. I've just gained so much from their wisdom and the wisdom of our community, a part of in CCRJP. What else? I don't know how to define community is really the true answer for me. I'm reading a long time coming, and I'll put this in the chat, but maybe y'all can see it. It's the Hastings Journal on Order. I'm reading backwards on gender and the law. It's actually now UC California, College of Law out of San Francisco. And in 2023, they put out one of their journals, and there's a really great article around community accountability. So I'll put all this in the chat, no worries. But basically, I was like, oh, good, they're going to give me the definition so I can share that with you all. Yep, no, that's not how it is, as we know. And so I don't know. Is it a place? Is it a group of people? Is it how I show up myself authentically? And then does that vary on how I participate in community and how I define it? I don't know is the answer. So I went to a really funny show the other day. This therapist turned performer slash writing these really hilarious songs, and she talked about kind of how to find community. And basically, she kind of decided that she talked a lot about what isn't community. And one of the examples that she gave, which I thought was hilarious, was maybe just going to yoga once a week and then practicing with each other, and then like, oh yeah, this is our yoga community. For a lot of people, that's actually not community, right? Maybe for some people it is, but I think it's this deeper, for me, it's this deeper grappling and these hard things and these wonderful things and these places where we can be celebratory and call one another in, being accountable and laugh and cry and kind of being in our, I think someone said this above, which I loved. Leticia, you said being seen, valued, and included for who I am, not despite difference, but because difference makes us stronger. I love that. So yes to that, and I'm still grappling with what is community. So with that, I will pass to you, Lindsay.
When you get around to it, we'd love to know what interests you.
Oh,
It's
sorry, I
not
couldn't hear
urgent.
you. No, go ahead.
Just the other things that you wanted to share.
Oh, well, I guess top of mind, I'm a very, very novice triathlete, period, and lots to learn, but having fun. So there you go.
That's amazing. Thank you. And sorry for just putting you on the spot. My name is Lindsay Frischer. I use she and they pronouns. I am currently living in Brooklyn, New York. So I'm no longer in Colorado. I was previously in Durango, Colorado, southwest corner of the state, pretty much the Four Corners. And I was born and raised in New York. So it's been 10 years since I've lived here. So this is a bit of a full circle moment. And that's relevant because boy, has my worldview shifted since the last time I lived here. I was a one-time corporate lawyer on Wall Street. I thought I understood what justice meant. And then I did a whole big personal transformation journey. Discovering more about who I am and what I care about, that led me to restorative justice and, you know, a worldview that I could live into and be proud of. And so I am currently the interim executive director of the Southwest Community Justice Coalition. That's a community justice organization, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a moment. And to Molly's point, I was previously at the district attorney's office in Durango running their diversion and restorative justice program for a few years. And what can I say about community? Someone did just enter it into the chat as well. I really now really seek out community where I feel a sense of belonging. Belonging where, you know, we don't have to shy away or hide from who we are, that there's a an element of I guess for lack of better word, security and safety. But also I think, you know, we're so conditioned to believe that community is dependent on certain variables like geographically where we're located or an association with, a shared interest, right? Like Ames was talking about inside like a yoga class or at a university, at a college. But I think to everyone's point, there's something more intentional there. And the three of us will get into that because we have been spending a lot of time building community coalitions. And so we've had to really sit inside the question of what is it to be in relationship to community, and what does community look like when we talk about restorative justice. And a fun fact, I don't know how fun this is, but I feel like I was surveying my last couple of years, and each year I seem to take on a new learning something new. So like 3 years ago it was ceramics. Last year, I mean, you do the thing that you do in Colorado, which is rock climb. And then this year it's the ukulele. So not good at any of those three things, but it's fun to be a beginner. And so I think it makes sense, unless Ames and Christina, you have any objections, for me to get into a little bit. And thank you all for sharing. And let me also just thank Christina and Ames, because the Colorado Coalition that we all are a part of is a huge resource. Not every state has the benefit of a state coalition in restorative justice. It has been such an honor to work with Christina as the executive director and Ames as the former president, such badasses in leading a state coalition on on a paradigm that is oftentimes received as confrontational or challenging to the existing system. So I've just learned a tremendous amount from both of them and continue to do so. And I'm just humbled to share the space with them on this panel. But yeah, I'm happy to share my screen because we want to go into, what have we learned through our experiences that we might be able to share with you. So let's see here. And then I'll just ask for a thumbs up if you can see this. Great. And I'm going to put it into slideshow. Does that work? Awesome. This week is my first week as an adjunct professor at Fort Lewis College teaching restorative justice. And because I'm in Brooklyn, it's virtual. And so I'm doing like a crash course in how to facilitate online presentations. And so thank you for bearing with me here. So we entitled sort of our presentation today on, community held restorative as community organizing. What does that look like or mean for us? So one of the sort of early propositions is coalition building, which is, another way of just saying community building around justice. You'll see on the left-hand side of the screen, there's this really cool looking poster that one of the community members in Durango was able to produce for us as a really talented artist and graphic recorder. And I'm going to be speaking initially from the perspective of the Southwest Community Justice Coalition. So we launched this as a idea out of the district attorney's office, right? Because the district attorney at the time, and it's always important to locate your champions, right? The district attorney at the time and the continuing, the new district attorney are both champions of restorative justice, which is, we're very lucky to have. And in Colorado, there's a couple statutes on the books that talk about authorizing restorative justice as a service for victims of crime, right? And so we asked ourselves in Durango, what do we have by way of restorative justice? And the answer was not much, right? So we went ahead and decided, how do we want to introduce restorative justice into our community? We thought about doing it inside the DA's office, but as you all know, it's tricky to sustain a paradigm like restorative justice inside a politicized office, right? Where if the DA changes and changes political views, political parties might not be so open and receptive to supporting our work. So we brought it into the community, and we did that first by a series of roundtable events, right? So how do you engage your community? It's going to be really specific on your community, but the best way to do it is to understand who they are, what the issues are that they face, and why and what does justice mean to them, and why is that important? So we have coalition building is community building, and we'll get into that in a minute. Organizing around collective care and accountability, it's capacity building. It's about educating and skilling up and resource sharing what is already available to us, as to take away from an over-reliance on a system that focuses on punishment. And it's skill building. It's trainings. It's empowering the community to step in and engage in the process of justice. So community building from the very beginning. There's a photo of me up top. We always organized in circle. So every time we gathered as a community, we gathered in circle practice. And we didn't just do this because, you know, that's cool, right? That's a cool way to organize, but rather because we knew that part of what we were trying to do in organizing was allow folks an opportunity to experience the practice. And right, so there's one thing about meeting people theoretically, intellectually, where they're at, and then as we just did through a centering practice, right, there's another way to embody what we're trying to do. And so the actual lived practice is an important you know, approach to that. And so we organize inside community agreements. We organize inside of circle practice. And then from there, and we brought in initially, we brought in as a roundtable event, we brought in anybody who was interested or curious about what the role community is in justice. And in that photo on the top, you might be able to see there's law enforcement in the room, there's the district attorney in the room, there's social workers, there's educators, right? So we're trying to get a broad survey. There's folks with lived experience who have been incarcerated, unhoused. And we introduced in these roundtables basically what became listening sessions, right? We organized in circles asking, like, basically community readiness assessments, asking for the community to share back what was vital to them and how they related to this topic. So some of these questions, by way of example, what values are important to you, right? So we know restorative justice is a values-based practice, right? So uplifting the community's values was going to be most important, especially getting started. Then just getting to, you know, soft, warm up the community with respect to how they relate to conflict. And all the while, these community members, again, they're in smaller circles now, right? And you'll see the card on the right. I think this is a really important option, but you know, we learn in so many different modalities. And so having one person write down and then pass the card over the next person to write down when someone's sharing is not only a way to capture the incredible feedback that we're harvesting, the wisdom we're harvesting, but then also we get to, at the end of our session, kind of put it up on the wall and see from every circle, you know, what was alive and relevant. Again, just in the tradition of harvesting collective wisdom. Yeah, so here are some of the questions. I mean, one of them, question five, how might our community reconcile historical harm from settler oppression, right? That's a hard-hitting question. And it was relevant, right? The Four Corners, Southwest Colorado, it's a border town. There is a tremendous amount of generational trauma that is present there, particularly amongst the Native Indigenous communities. And so this was a very relevant question for us to not hide behind, but rather bring forward. Understanding that part of restorative justice goals or missions, at least the way we're holding them, is to address first harms. And then similarly, getting, you know, continuing to meet and do community building. Circle practice is vital for community building. And as we started to take shape as a coalition, right, as folks continue to return month over month, we started to ask these community members almost as de facto advisory council members to help us define our mission, our vision, and where we were going, our values. So yeah, again, just paying a little respect to the beautiful artwork here. And then we distilled all this information as a core team, right? Because it was vital to say, great, now with all this data, what does it mean for us? And one of the ways we did that was also to pass it along to a graphic artist who was able to capture some of the key takeaways from those, at least those first two roundtable events, and display what is so relevant and significant to our community. So collect the data, share the wisdom, right? And so we're really proud of this because it's on display, right? This our community is responding to the ways that they perceive the issues that are relevant and the ways they perceive justice. Capacity building. So that was community building. This is capacity building. Another really vital part of community held RJ looks like helping the community fully realize, understand, and realize their capacity to address conflict, harm, and violence. Right. And it requires, it frankly requires all of us. And that's part of the mission is to empower each of our community members to recognize that they have something to offer the community. And in that way, I think helps to shape belonging. Right. So asset mapping is a great practice. So basically what we did was we asked our community inside the categories of physical assets, technical assets, and social assets. And we left financial assets to the side for this particular practice. We asked folks what they felt they had to offer inside these categories. And oh my goodness, can I tell you, we had, you know, if 30 people were in the room for that practice on that particular day, we had, you know, over 100 different responses inside those categories. Right. And so when you kind of distill that further into a sort of manageable spreadsheet, you can see that we really have the resources to take care of each other in really vital ways. Somebody has a spare room, somebody has a spare car, somebody likes to accompany someone to the doctor, right? Things like that. And then also curriculum education. In shaping our mission, vision, values, it became evident to our community or us through our community. That we really stood for transformational justice as well, right? This idea that we didn't want to just be a service provider for the criminal legal system, but rather maintain a social analysis of right, a power analysis of what we understand to be really problematic and harmful with systems, particularly on the communities that make the most contact with them. And so we introduce a decolonial framework, and you know, and this is also just aligned with the sort of fundamental principles of restorative justice as an ancient indigenous practice. But really, educating, building our community's capacity to uphold the values and the ways of being in relationship to each other in the natural world. Right, understanding there is a whole other possibility of being in relationship to that, pre-colonial, decolonial, outside of the dominant culture. So a lot of capacity building looks like culture building work. And then finally, one of the capacity building items that we prioritize with partnership development. Again, not dissimilar to asset mapping, but the idea that we can really do so much by sharing and leveraging each other's resources, finding your champions, finding the organizations or the system partners that are open and available for cooperation and collaboration, not competition. And so thinking about key takeaways and lessons learned, these are just a few. But as you can see, this is movement work. Right? It's emergent and dynamic and evolving. It's not static, it's not fixed, lest we become part of the system or institutions. So staying flexible and agile is really important. And it's all relational, right? We always return back to the foundational organizing principle of relationships, which is, what restorative justice stands for. And so to quote Adrienne Marie Brown, we work to move at the speed of trust. Community accountability reclaims power to the people, right? Restore so much of circle practice is redistribution and sharing power. So much of community-held restorative justice is returning that power to the people, and allowing the community to hold the accountability for each other. And then, of course, we model these values, principles, and practices so that we can, in fact, be responsive to conflict and harm and violence when it arises, and it inevitably arises because we're human. And then, last and definitely not least, and not comprehensive, no one person has all the answers. I have found personally so much grace in this last takeaway. When I have felt, especially as a co-founder of this organization or an executive director, like, oh, I have to figure this out, always remembering, no, I don't, right? That's actually the worst answer. It's who do we need in the room, right? Who needs to be a part of this conversation so that we can figure this out? And so we get to continue to return to that as well. Thank you. Imagining there might be some questions, but I think we'll hold those till the end. And I'm happy to pass it off.
Thanks, Lindsay. I love your slides. I'll just say that again. I'm also just going to stick the resource that I referred to in the chats in case folks are interested in checking that article out or that chapter. So I just want to give a little bit of a add-on to how our Englewood Municipal Court Restorative Justice Program kind of fits within some of these concepts around collective care and capacity building. And I'm going to kind of share a little bit based on those key takeaways that I really appreciate how you outlined those. So our court program is a little different in that it was kind of initially pitched by some of the decision makers within the city of Englewood, which is very small. It's actually only about 35,000 people that live in Englewood. It's just south of Denver. And so there were some decision makers that kind of came all into the fold at one time back in 2019. And from that, there was like this initial surge of excitement. And so there was a community conversation that was had, kind of a panel, I would say, to talk about and highlight a different program in our state. And from that, there was a lot of energy to say, okay, how and what could restorative justice look like here in our community? And at the time, I lived in Englewood. And so I came and I was attending that meeting as a resident. And got super excited because I wanted to be involved in the work in my own community. And so from that initial conversation in winter of 2019 and then through 2020, we put together an advisory team of folks that were both in systems but also outside of systems to be in conversation around how and what does restorative justice look like. Not as I will totally just acknowledge, not as thorough as what Lindsay and their team did down in Durango. I love hearing your sharing around that because I even know today there's other things that we could do to continue to enhance our community engagement through your work. But through 2020, there were many conversations that took place to then say, and I believe, Carmen, you were saying that you all are looking to put together an advisory group. Similarly, we put together a team that Okay, who and who all is interested in this? How are people impacted? What are the opportunities for integrating restorative justice? And so it was through those relationships that we built through Circle, even in our meetings, to then say, here's what the suggestion is for the city of Inglewood. And then the city took that on. They ended up finding some money to have an actual program get started, to have a staff person. So I was lucky enough to get hired by then, the city, and at that point. And I will say that yes, we are situated within the municipal court. However, the program has really been able to thrive and grow and extend now our reach into and connection with Littleton, a city next to us. We're also looking at extending to another city. It's happened through relationships. So the speed of trust, we've been at this for now 4.5 years, and we've just finalized a relationship with this other city of Littleton at this point. And really the trust and the practice that the community volunteers have really bought into and support one another around. We have over 60 active volunteers for our program, and that's really why the program works. And so it's through those relationships and the ongoing integration of, yeah, what are the emerging needs and how do we respond to, gosh, we've seen several similar cases coming through, right, of extra needs of our middle schoolers that we get most of our youth cases from, right? What are the needs there and how do we support those in more emergent ways? And our volunteers have been the ones to say, oh, could we try this or could we try that? And so it's been about the invitation and then the opportunity for folks to really step in and offer their gifts and wisdom for us to then be able to kind of shift and build those partnerships with other city partners and folks in our county, as well as many of the school districts, as well as our police departments and other folks in the community to just share about what we're up to. So just to name that, even though we are situated within the court system, we really are only thriving because of the community involvement, right? Because people feel like this is, they are a part of something that's really special and that's happening and that they want to be bought into and want to contribute to. And so just to name that, I think sometimes these community, sometimes these conversations, and I don't imagine in these conversations specifically, but sometimes I hear kind of this system versus community, RJ, you know, binary. And I don't actually think it's that easy, if you will. I think it's through these connections and these relationships that we're able to really emerge in these different ways. So just wanted to add that part. And then Christine, I think I'm passing it to you.
Yeah, thanks for naming that. To get us outside of thinking the binary that it's either this or that, we're so kind of entrenched to think of like sides that we need a side. And it's actually when I think about community health and the ways that it is, it's like it's not one way. We all have our different perspectives, and community can happen within systems. And because there's people in systems and outside of systems and in between, and you know, the layers in between all of that. And so people, we are inherently relational. And so that's why it has all this nuance and we can't put it in boxes. So thanks for kind of painting that really clearly, Ames. And thank you for the framework, Lindsay, because I'm always getting things on deeper levels. So like, thank you. Because I can see how the work that we're all three doing in our own different situations and positions aligns with what you've put together. One of the things that came up before I share this, some slides around CCRJP is this notion of the coalition of the willing that both have talked about, where it's not just, you know, just RJ people, but it's like who's open to leaning into shared values? Who's open to knowing that we have to get there together? Who's open to, you know, a different way of doing things? And so forming coalition health spaces with folks who are willing and able to do that, maybe doing restorative approaches without calling it that even. So thinking kind of broader and more inclusive to what is in front of us and who's showing up. Okay. So, yeah, I think I'm going to attempt to also do what Lindsay did and share my screen. And I invite Grace in at all levels. Yeah, so tell me, do you see my Canva goodies? Okay, great. And then let me put it on presenter mode. Boom. Presenter mode. I still want to see everybody, so present. All right, presenter mode. Okay, so what are y'all seeing? Are you seeing people and slides? Yeah. Are you seeing my presenter mode?
So we see the slides, and I unpinned you, Christina, so that we can see everyone on the screen as well. Is that what you're
Okay.
saying?
Yeah, I love that.
Okay, great.
Great. So as I'm going to kind of take it from, Durango, which is local, Englewood. So Durango's rural. Englewood is on the Front Range, which is more urban. And then we're going to take it to the statewide level and share a little bit about what our kind of umbrella statewide coalition is about. And so we, in general, we are membership-led organization, and we're comprised of practitioners, organizations, supporters throughout the state who focus on creating public access to high-quality restorative justice practices. So this looks a lot of different ways, but one of the things I wanted to highlight before I go into what we look like is where it came from. So Ames might know the history a little bit better than me, but from what I've understood is that it started with restorative justice program directors coming together to really advocate for the needs of their communities all over the state. And so that group, which I believe started in 2013-ish, around there, or maybe later, eventually evolved into wanting to be more inclusive and broad. So in about 2021, Colorado Coalition for Restorative Justice Directors changed to practices so that it can be wider. It can invite people who aren't necessarily in those power positions, but those who are practicing, those who are allied, those who want to support. And so our coalition grew into a more public access, more of a public access to what it means to coalition together. So yeah, I wanted to share a little bit about that. We as a group, and Lindsay and Ames talked a little bit about that, but we lean very heavily, in the best sense of the word, into our values and try to walk the talk of what we're doing in our different localities around the state, and when we come together to practice that together. So, what does it look like? We do a lot of stuff online because we are statewide. And there's challenges to that, of course, but there's also a lot of opportunity there. So we always start with check-ins every time we meet, whether it's in committees, communities of practice, board meetings. We always start with a check-in. It could have a prompt or not. Sometimes we're just like, oh my gosh, how is everybody? And really sink into a care-centered approach, and not just care-centered, but capacity responsive. So we want to, and we actively practice being aware of where everyone's at in any given moment. We may have lofty goals of visioning the next 5 years in a meeting, but if people are barely able to, show up and do the basic necessities of their day, that's one of our community that is not there yet. So maybe we need to slow down a bit. Maybe we need to adjust a little bit to see how we can meet their needs, or if we need to reschedule, or if they want to have the recording, and then we circle back with them at a later time. So really always meeting people where they're at. The challenge of this is things go slower, but also the opportunity is to kind of challenge the urgency dominant culture too. is to really go at the speed of trust. What does that mean? Really go at the speed of keeping those connections, the relational pieces at the forefront. So, yeah, we do that through a couple of things. We have guiding cultural norms, as you see on there. We like to elevate Dr. Beverly Title's work of the five R's of restorative justice and put some action words around that, tending to our relationships, cultivating respect, showing up responsibly, turn to repair and support reintegration. And so, how do we as a coalition actually? What does this actually look like? Well, a few year the year before I came on, there was a community tension that got elevated during a racial and restorative justice conversation. And what happened, what happened after that was that membership folks came together and said, we need to have a way for us within this space to know how we're going to deal with conflict and when harm arises and occurs. And so part of that was a community held response to get feedback on what do we, how does that, we want that to look. And so we created a harm process guidance so that we can be really clear what our practice principles are, really clear what our guidelines are and what we're living into. And then when that, when harm happens, whether that's in a group setting online or in a committee group or anything like that, what is the process that we do in order to tend to that? So you would, I mean, even in restorative justice practitioner spaces where you think everybody kind of knows and gets it, no, we continuously have to remember, practice, learn more. It's more of a spiral than a linear process of like, great, I checked that off. I got certified. No, it's so dynamic that we have to constantly be coming back to it because we all have our stuff around not only being harmed, but when we harm others and taking accountability. And that's challenging and hard. Culturally, we're not set up to, and we're not taught how to do that in a good way. We're not shown very good models in our current and past administrations and leadership on how to do accountability well. And so most of that good modeling is coming from grassroots community health spaces. And so we try to live into that as much as we can as a group. So what do we look like? Who are we? We are statewide, I said. This is a little map of where our membership was for 2024. We have about 100 plus members throughout the state. Some of them are organizations, some of them are private practitioners. But this is, you can see on this map, we have some gaps. And part of our goal going forward is to, you know, really focus on being truly a statewide organization. So identifying what the barriers are in those areas and what are the relationships that we can start fostering. Try to find the coalition of the willing in each place, right? Through our relational contacts and partnerships to learn more about those regions and do some outreach. Okay, so the next one I wanted to show real quick is I mentioned a little bit like who, what are our contexts look like? So, yes, we are, our membership is in the DA space, diversion, municipalities. Those spaces for within criminal justice system, post-conviction or post or probation, post-conviction. We also have practitioners who are in community-based organizations who work in a community space, but also interface with the criminal justice system as well. None of these are, you know, totally siloed. There's some overlap. Just like with our independent contractors, some of them work with RJ in the workplace, with different government agencies. Some work within schools. Some work consulting with community-based organization or with the criminal justice system, right? And so we're also have RJ coordinators in the K through 12 education space throughout the state, and then also in higher ed. Yeah. Okay, just a couple more slides I want to share. I want to share like what do we actually do together when we do come together? What do we actually do? How does this look? So how do we coalition together? So a number of ways: convenings, We come together to educate and inform and share information virtually and in person. We're actually going to have a statewide convening the first in a few years on September 19th or September 18th, which is super exciting. We're going to have a hybrid day-long event, which will be able to provide public access throughout the state. So another way, which is really at the heart of something Lindsay was talking about, was about, capacity building, right? How do we build our capacity as practitioners? So we have a few communities of practice, one for folks in the education realm and one for those in the criminal legal system, or we call it the justice community of practice. And we also have one called the Future of RJ. And so in these spaces, people come together, led by a board member and a community member. So it's co-led. And the content depends, and Lindsay's actually the co-lead of our Justice Coalition, community of practice. And so it's really about the needs of the community. So if the community comes in, it's like, I really want to learn more about this specific, or I have this challenge. I have this scenario that I really want some feedback on. So there can be like live in, happening mentorship that happens within that space and brainstorming, because we all need help. All of our different challenges and restorative justice come with nuance and come with difference depending on who's harmed, who's responsible, what the community texture is. All of those things influence. So if we can crowdsource a little bit the wisdom in the room, that helps so much for us to not feel, for the membership to not feel like they're siloed in these different spaces and only they have to have the answer, right? What Ames was saying, not one of us have to have the answer, but actually all of us have the answer. Oh, it was in the slide deck. Yeah, all of us have the answer. There's a collective wisdom that can happen. And so community of practice are those spaces. And I'm seeing this concept happen in more and more organizations and efforts to really create that space for practice. So another way is networking. We come together and we have a Google group where we're like, hey, I like Ames just put out this week, hey, I'm doing a facilitation training and we have some open spots. Anybody want to jump in? Great, awesome. Filled those gaps right away. And so there's this opportunity if people are struggling with things, people need a connection. Does anybody know anybody that's dealt with this kind of a case? Does anybody know who I can get in contact who works? With people in system impacted folks in this community? Do you know of any organizations? All of those kinds of questions can be in the sense of mutual aid and coming together to crowdsource solutions and opportunities through that networking space. We also have committees that help move restorative justice forward in the state. We have one of the most robust ones is our outreach committee. And Ames was a part of that and co-led that with me for a few years. And that is where we talk about policy and legislation. That is where we talk about our partnerships. What partnerships do we want to have beyond RJ? What other sectors may be wanting to learn more about RJ and where there can be some interface there? And also, outreach is talking about racial justice and restorative justice. And like Ames was saying, first and second harms. This is a big part of our work is to learning to honor where these practices come from. And when we talk about fidelity, we want to keep fidelity of practice to honoring where it's come from and also honoring not to replicate systems of oppression or harm in the work that we do. Some things that we found is that if we're not actively dismantling these structures of power over within ourselves and in the groups that we're in, they creep in, they come in, they're our default mode. They are the culture and the ocean that we've been brought up in and swim in. And so without active conversation, dialogue, learning, unlearning about these things, we will perpetuate harm on a systemic level. And so we actively learn together and center this work in a series that we have RJ squared. Okay, and the last thing is we have quarterly meetings, check-ins to talk about salient topics that affect us all. And so how do we know what to talk about and what's going on with everybody? Well, we have an annual needs assessment where we're collecting feedback and we're learning what is going on throughout the state and different sectors that people are in. And so we go through that needs assessment and we hold our board to be accountable to planning with me as the ED of how we can meet those needs and to say when we can't or didn't meet those needs so well in 1 year. And so next year, we're going to try to do a little bit better. One of those areas is definitely funding and all of that, which seems to be hitting all of us in different ways, but in similar ways as well. So we keep on trying to, that's our biggest, for me, that's our biggest goal going forward. But I did want to highlight two things where I just talked about under equity, diversion, and social justice seems to be a real big need in our community. And so we do hold 3 to 4 times a year, okay, restorative and racial justice series. Sometimes it's been about power, about being in right use of power. We did a training with the Right Use of Power Institute. Other times, we had a great circle when we sat with the Wind River Cheyenne folks up in Wyoming, and came down to Larimer or came down to Longmont, which is their ancestral lands, and we sat in circle and learned about the boarding schools and how it affected their community. And how they're utilizing restorative and transformative ways and circles to repair that harm within their community. And so we've done that and different things that we've, oh, I wanted to mention one other is we had a speaker, Vivian Anderson, talk about the school to prison pipeline and had some youth from Words Beyond Walls come and help co-facilitate that space. And so that was a hybrid in-person and virtual space. So we try to stay as responsive as we can to what's coming up in our community and try to meet those needs as best we can. And so the other part I wanted to highlight here was the community and system partnership piece. One of the big projects that we've completed and continue to roll out in terms of building capacity is our new statewide RJ practitioner guidelines. And so some of you may have heard about the Colorado state standards that we have for RJ that have made their way throughout the nation. Our coalition, in conjunction with the RJ Council, realized that they needed to be updated. And we wanted to do that process in a way that was community held. And so there was a team of practitioner writers that came together to churn that process and not just revise, but really, I would say, reform or transform the document to something that includes all the different ways in which restorative practices shows up in our state. And so not so linear, more nuanced and a broad view, but also incorporating more progressive ways of looking at restorative justice, like, you know, transformative justice and different thought leaders with that, so that we can realize that it's not a binary, it's not RJ or TJ. It's actually how can they help inform one another? Because this is an evolving practice, right? So if there is a transformative justice, then there's some evolution that's happening. There's some learning that is opportunity there. And so the writers really took that on and there were various drafts. There were some drafts that went to, you know, were really maybe more on the more traditional conservative path. Then there was another draft that went on the other spectrum of more transformative ways of looking at restorative approaches. And then we kind of went back and forth and then settled into a space in the middle where it's not perfect. That's not what we were going for, but we're looking for a place where we can go forward from. And so part of That is, oh, I forgot to mention, we did have community input from various folks who were adjacent to practitioners that had some input, community that were impacted by restorative justice and continue to be, were system impacted, were part of that process. So we landed on a version, and part of that version, which I really love, is that there's a feedback mechanism, which I think is super important to have in any system or any process, that we need to know how it's, how do we keep this alive, and how do we do that is by getting feedback, and for asking for feedback, making that feedback accessible and easy enough for someone to access. And so we have that in a Google form by Kathleen McGoy, who was our lead on this project, so that it can really help people understand how to give feedback in a way that's constructive and it can move us forward in the document. So how are we dealing with that? Well, once a year, we're going to come together in October and review any feedback that we get from that document, and then line out how we're going to integrate that into the document. And if there's a wider process that needs to happen with that, we won't do that every year, but reviewing the input will definitely happen once a year, and continuing to have conversations around that. And so, yeah, I'll just share a little bit more about that. We just put out a video series about the guidelines. And so if any of you are interested to learn more about the guidelines, we have a CCRJP YouTube channel where you can go to and be able to see the first four guidelines. We have dialogues with practitioners to kind of unpack the guidelines and make them more accessible to folks. And so knowing that it is for Colorado, but we want to offer that and help inform any other communities that may be working to make their own guidelines. Okay, I think I've talked a long time, but I do want to add one more thing about this awesome partnership that we're doing with the Colorado Coalition Against Sexual Assault. CCASA is a organization that serves victims and survivors from the sexual harm realm statewide. And so they showed a real interest in restorative justice a few years ago, and through some of our members, have really formed a solid, collaborative, restorative approach to community organizing and cross-training between advocates and practitioners about how we bring restorative approaches to the sexual harm space and the intimate partner violence space. So we're really proud. We've held a couple events together and summits together, and so that beautiful collaboration continues. Yeah, so I think I'm going to pause there because I know we're coming a little bit onto time, and so I wanted to stop sharing, I believe, and see what's happening in the room. And thank you for posting that, Ames. Yeah, and for posting the guidelines. So yeah, that's a little bit of what CCRJP does, acknowledging that not every state has this, and also acknowledging that we started from not having this, and it's evolved over the years. And so my hope is that other states or regions can organize to become coalition, and to really shift the narrative from we're having to compete against each other in the restorative justice realm to a more of a collaborative community-held model for how we move this forward, on a state level. So thanks. I think Ames, you were going to mention it. I was going to hand it to you. Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, CCRJP and Christina's leadership has just been phenomenal, especially over the last handful of years as it's become a nonprofit officially. So we're really, really lucky to have Christina and Lindsay and our board do such great work. I will just mention two things that have come out of kind of some of the work that CCRJP has co-held with the Restorative Justice Council here in our state. One is that in a recent co-holding of a policy circle that we had with CICASA during one of their conferences, where we had people kind of share in these concentric circles, share about the work of restorative justice. We had a listening circle group of folks to listen and learn of how RJ is being utilized in our state through policy work and et cetera. And then we had kind of the larger listening circle of participants and holders of the space. And in that conversation, through a series of kind of other connection points, a request or a piece that we were asked to share was, what's kind of a dream that you have of engaging in restorative justice practices and how we can kind of expand? And so from that prompt, there's been some momentum around how do we actually utilize and integrate restorative justice practices into and throughout as like a threaded integration of the peace officer standards and trainings process within the state of Colorado, which they're in the middle of completely redoing. So this is all of the training that every single law enforcement officer gets in the state. And there's been some momentum around how do we actually thread in restorative justice at the very basic level of baby cops, if you will, getting this training. So that's one really amazing example that kind of came out of these collaborative opportunities to say, well, what else are the needs? Where else are there opportunities to do that? And the second piece that I'll highlight is kind of this piece around the Restorative Rainbow Alliance. So Restorative Rainbow Alliance came together basically through a convening again that that CCRJP and the RJ Council, they were holding a virtual convening in October of 2020. And there was a colleague of mine, Rami El-Harib, called together an open space conversation to talk about how are we engaging and utilizing and supporting and inviting LGBTQ plus voices and perspectives in our restorative justice work that we're doing. And so from that initial conversation where there were maybe 10 to 12 of us, a part of that initial conversation, five of us stuck together and over the years created the Restorative Rainbow Alliance and ended up our first project was really to say, well, gosh, it seems like sometimes because there's just not an awareness, or sometimes there is an actual erasure, or people are creating more harm of not understanding or recognizing what some of the needs and values and strengths of LGBTQ plus participants and facilitators are really offering in these spaces. And so, just from a variety of our own practice perspectives and experiences, we decided to write a code or a guideline for facilitators that could be used in conjunction with, at the time, the old Colorado guidelines that were created in 2012, I believe the first in the country. And so RRA said, hey, how do we write something that then supports the integration and uplifting of LGBTQ plus needs and challenges or concerns or questions that folks have participating in restorative justice, both as practitioners but also participants? And so over the 2 year period, finalized the code in 2022, and I'll put something in the chat here as well so you can access that. But basically, we took the same old now format of the Colorado standards or guidelines and wrote our code to then be able to support any facilitator, whether it's Colorado or anywhere else, to say, how can we bring in these awarenesses and these points and these supportive best practices, if you will, to facilitate. And so that was actually formally adopted by the Restorative Justice Council, which is our statewide appointed entity of folks that has been around since 2007. It's built into legislation. That group adopted the RRA guidelines to say this is now considered a standard founding document of restorative justice guidelines and documents for the state of Colorado. And so from there, that work. So I just want to give a huge, huge shout out specifically to Rami El-Harib, as well as Laura Beth Waltz, because the three of us have kind of held and fostered the development of RRA over the years. And, we all have different perspectives of within the criminal legal system working within RJ, as well as working in high school setting. Laura Beth works in high school setting. And so it was through this conversation of, well, wait, what we need to be able to have something that supports not only ourselves in engaging in the process, but also our participants and what we're seeing. And gosh, there's more harm that's been created. What are the needs there? And what are the gifts that we have to offer to come together to support and kind of change some of the trajectory and bring in some more acknowledgement and awareness. So really, really proud of the work that we've been able to do and hold and continue to try to respond to what are the needs. So from that, RA has also been able to respond to Laura Beth was really holding a lot of space after there was a mass shooting that happened at Club Q in Colorado Springs several years ago. I don't know if folks have heard of that, but Laura Beth, as a representative of RRA, went and held healing circles and listening circles for how do we support and create space for community grief and community processing and community connection after that kind of event. Rami held circles to really welcome new refugees into the country several years ago in Atlanta, that are queer, queer refugees coming into the States. How do we build connection and community in those ways? And so really trying to, from that LGBTQ lens, what are the needs there and how can we support, again, supporting facilitators and practitioners in RJ who are queer, but also our community and participants who are find themselves engaging in an RJ process at whatever level that might be. So again, I guess what I would say is that that came about because there was a gap, and we saw that, and we had experienced that, and we felt that, and we knew that we had the opportunity and the gifts to be able to kind of help support and change that mentality, if you will, and kind of help our restorative justice move in a different trajectory. And quite frankly, we've gotten feedback from all over the world saying, "Hey, we're using these guidelines to support what we're up to." And so, definitely invite you to. And thanks, Molly, for posting some of our links here as well and shouting out, yeah, RA. But just want to name as a resource. Hopefully, that can be helpful for you all as well. But again, from the point of that was really community held. We spent 2 years in a deep writing project, getting to know each other, building trust. How do we create and edit and put forth this thing that really honors the values of our practices, as well as, many of the same identities that we held in that space. So just another example of some of the work that has come out of these opportunities for sure.
Ames, I just wanted to add to that, where I believe that that process that y'all did with RA and those guidelines then helped influence the evolution of the new guidelines. And so it's kind of like evolving, where trying to integrate the work that you all did and be like, oh yeah, let's expand our mind. This expansion happened through that process, and now let's keep expanding our mind and be more inclusive and be more open to what how we can welcome more people into this practice in a way that's trauma-informed, that's mutual, has mutual partiality, looks at bias, all of these things. And it was really informed by that process. So I want to give some props there too.
If I could just add too that I'm just so in awe of all of that careful, slow work that has reached not, I mean, not just Colorado. We're not talking just like statewide here. I hear of people referring and studying the Colorado best practices, like you said, worldwide. And I'm also really, really, really grateful that the Restorative Rainbow Alliance document has also been integrated in with the new edition of the state best practices. And forgive me if you already mentioned that. Did
Oh, Molly,
I
sorry.
freeze?
We missed you there.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, I was just saying, like, I'm just really grateful for so many things about the slow work, A, and B, that I see that the RRA PDF standards and practices, suggestions for practitioners programs beyond restorative justice, too. These aren't just for restorative justice. These are excellent points for living. But they've been adopted in this latest edition too of the best practices from the state. Correct. And I think you probably touched on that, but I just want to make that known, to just mirror back that this is like a big deal. It is a really big deal for this global field. So thank you. And that's part of the reason why I'm in awe of like just hearing from each of you tonight, today, how you built these pieces. And then not only that, you landed them in such a way that they're articulate. They are distilled from a group, from group wisdom, and they landed in what could be arguably a policy document, even though it's not quote unquote policy from our government per se. It's as good as gold in this field because we know and we trust that it's been done in a cross-profession manner, and based as much as possible to your best abilities over many years, on restorative principles and practices. So, yeah. Anyway, I didn't mean to take up so much space there. I'll give it back to you, but I'm standing by to help people interact with you. And yeah, curious how I can support.
I just wanted to highlight that when we're talking about community held, like it was, you named it, Laura Beth, Rami, Ames, came from a community health space, an open space, which is a community health space. And so like, and then we have this agreement policy that was birthed from that. And now it's got a far-reaching impact and a far-reaching reach. So just really love how community health can be local and place-based, but it can also be all these different things. It can be network-based, can be identity based, and it can then transcend all of those and be accessible to a lot of different folks. So just wanted to highlight that, in praise. Yeah. So we have a little bit of time. Lindsay and Ames, is there anything else you'd like to share to kind of wrap up our time? Or yeah. And then also, of course, ask folks if they have some reflections, questions, things like that. Lindsay, did you? I know we talked for a while. I didn't know if you wanted to circle back with anything to complete that.
Hi, I'm curious if there's any questions or reflections that y'all want to share into the space.
Also, I'd like to honor someone in the Colorado movement that is no longer as active as she was, that I witnessed firsthand, and had the privilege of learning and working with her, and that's Patti LaTie, out of District 11, I believe, Chaffee County, Colorado, and her relational work to really build a program to capacity was really something to witness. Breaking bread, having meals with people, and not just our volunteers, but people in the DA's office, going out to lunch, listening for what's working, what's not, and so forth. So Pat, thank you, Patty, wherever you are right now. And she also introduced the therapy dogs in restorative justice programming and has written a little kind of like the little book on therapy dogs in restorative justice. So I'm just going to pitch that right now, and it's called Pause for Peace. And I designed the cover, actually. I'm not pitching myself, but like that's a fun fact that I didn't get to name earlier. So, yeah, how are you all doing? Any engaging questions? What's on your mind? Like, this has been such an incredible session with these three amazing folks. There's got to be some questions. It's okay if there's not. Popcorn style. And also, thank you to everyone for being willing to share earlier today about yourselves and, yeah, in the chat. Thank you. And while you're thinking, I have one more request of community consensus, and that is, given the nature of the information shared today, and just like the wisdom in this space, would everybody be okay if this became a podcast? And I haven't asked Ames, Lindsay, and Christina about that, but we made earlier agreements, earlier in this series about where these recordings would go. But do we have kind of a sense that it would be okay as an audio-only podcast if people would be okay with that? And if you're not, just please email and just say, hey, prefer not, rjonrise@gmail.com. Carolyn says, thank you. I appreciate the well-thought-out structure of your capacity and community building collaboration. Letitia, thank you all for holding space with us, sharing your expertise and providing resources. Jerry, thank you. Carmen, just a big thank you. Excellent presentations, very informative, inspiring. Lots of kudos here in the chat today. And remember, everything that's been shared in here as far as links is on our Padlet already, except for the upcoming link, which will go right to the RRA document at the Restorative Rainbow Alliance website, which is actually on our series website page at Restorative Justice on the Rise, but I want to make sure it's on the Padlet for you too.
Yeah, we
Yes,
just
yeah, if you have an email that you're willing to share with the group today, Lindsay and Ames, I see Christina just dropped. Okay, great. Thank you. So we've got emails rolling in if you have questions after the fact for each of these individuals tonight. Ames, thank you so much. And any special requests about the use of your phone, text or call or whatever? Okay. All right.
thank you, Molly. Just want a big shout out to you and Restorative on the Rise for just continuing from kind of the day one, putting out important content and programming and staying keeping us all abreast of the evolution of RJ in sort of our westernized modalities and locations. And so thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a work of passion and commitment, and it moves at the speed of trust over time, for sure. But networking and storytelling is at the heart of Restorative Justice on the Rise, and it's always a privilege to give the mic to people all over the world. There are many. So never forget, each of us as individuals on these little screens, we're not alone at all. And it sometimes might feel like that, but there are people all over the place doing this work. Sorry about the background noise. So is there anything else any before we conclude, I know we've gone a bit over time according to your schedule today.
No, I would just love to, or invite folks if they want to share like a one word closing to just how you are here now as we check out, just to kind of bring us out in a way leaning into our values. And so I'll just share, I'm leaving with a lot of love, which is so necessary in this work. Well, thank you. Pass it to Ames.
Skipping and coming back to me. Lindsay, can I pass to you? Or yeah, I see a bunch
Of
of people
course.
putting in the chat, which is great too.
Yeah, I also feel really connected. I know this is easy to so that as well. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, please, invitation to share your voice with us.
I think heart-centered would be my word. Feel really connected here. Body, thank you. Thank you all.
Empowered, connected. And just a reminder, if this wasn't the most amazing session yet, of course it was. We've had all amazing sessions with great people. We have another incredible human being to look forward to next week. That's Danielle DeCant from the Hood River District Attorney's Office in the state of Oregon, United States. She's actually to credit too for being an inspiration for this topic framing. There was a conference in Bend, Oregon in 2024 that I had the privilege of doing a panel with, and she was one of the panelists, and the conversation was extraordinary. So really excited to have her with us next week, same time, same place. And thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, Ames, thank you. Christina, thank you. And Lindsay, thank you. You guys are amazing, and just really appreciate all the time that you've taken to put in on this presentation to articulate the years of dedication that have gone into everything that you've shared tonight. Thank you. See you next week.